To most of us, violence can seem random, but what if we could actually predict the way violence spreads? Current State's Melissa Benmark is here to tell us about a new study out of East Lansing here that did just that. Hi, Melissa.
Mark, way back in 2008, I read this article in the New York Times, and it really stuck with me. It's why I noticed this particular study we're going to talk about. It was about an epidemiologist named Gary Slutkin, and he believed that some kinds of violence spread much the way an infection does, and he founded a group in Chicago called Cease Fire that worked at literally interrupting the spread of violence. Well, fast forward all these years, and I see this new groundbreaking study out of MSU that actually gives hard data to support that idea. April Zioli is an associate professor in MSU's School of Criminal Justice and was the lead author on the study. I caught up with her last week for more explanation of what it looked at.
There's been an idea that homicide is contagious. You know, for about 30 years, people have wondered whether homicide spreads. And we wanted to test whether or not homicide was contagious or spread through communities in a manner similar to an infectious disease. And in this study, we hypothesized that some types of homicide might be contagious, might spread, while other types might not. So we looked at seven types of homicide, and those were gang-motivated homicides, drug-related homicides, intimate partner homicides, non-intimate familial homicides, robbery homicides, revenge homicides, in which someone comes back days later, weeks later, months later to get revenge for an event, and escalating dispute homicides, where someone immediately moves to lethal violence during an event.
It seems to me that some of those categories could potentially... How did you deal with the numbers if you got somebody who was in both of those categories?
We actually had a very strict coding definition for each category, and it ended up being pretty rare that we might have someone who fit both. For example, for gang-motivated homicides, we only coded a homicide as being gang-motivated if the homicide occurred in the service of the gang, so in the service of the gang's economic, territorial, or social interests, or there was a dispute within a gang.
So what did you find? What did the study find?
We found that there were two types of homicide that didn't cluster, didn't have hot spots, and those were robbery homicide an intimate partner homicide. Those types of homicides seem to be randomly placed in space and time throughout the city of Newark, which is where we did the research. The other types of homicide all clustered, so there were little hot spots of these types of homicides, but only one type of homicide showed a pattern of movement throughout the city of Newark through time, and that was gang-motivated homicide. What was particularly interesting was that in areas where gang homicides were clustering, were prevalent, we also saw hotspots of revenge homicides and drug-related homicides. So it looks like there's a common cause or facilitating factor that leads to many types of homicides erupting in those areas at those times.
Which also, I suppose, kind of fits the infectious disease metaphor that, for instance, HIV also means that people then are susceptible to pneumonia and tuberculosis and that kind of
sure.
thing. So these killings make the area more susceptible to other kinds of killings.
Yes, or the infectious agent, is spawning all of these types of killings. You know, so there's a facilitating factor or a common cause. A facilitating factor might be the prevalence of guns in the area. If there are many guns, if people are carrying guns, disputes can turn lethal fairly quickly. You know, it could have also been the influence of the gangs. As I mentioned, gang members committed a lot of these other types of homicides as well. So if gangs were becoming more violent, that could have spilled out into other types of homicides.
And how does it spread?
There are three things that an infectious disease needs to spread. And the first thing is a source of the infection. And for homicide, this is conditions that make it likely that interactions will lead to homicide. And I already mentioned that the presence of firearms makes it more likely that a homicide will occur. Gang activity, which is what we think, you know, happened here, you know, gang activity will make homicide more likely. The presence of drug markets, so a lot of illegal drug activity, can make homicide more likely. The second thing a disease needs to spread is a way to spread. For homicide, this can be person to person, word of mouth. So if someone finds out that a member of their gang was killed, you know, by a member of another gang, they may take revenge. They may retaliate and commit homicide. But it can also spread through fear of homicide. As an area becomes more dangerous, people may take steps to protect themselves, and that can include arming up, carrying more weapons, being less willing to seem weak. And the third thing a disease needs to spread is a susceptible population. Research has shown that those who live in economically disadvantaged areas, particularly young minority males, seem to be the most susceptible to homicide. All of these things, you know, were present for particularly gang-motivated homicides. But if we applied those things to intimate partner homicide, which, as I mentioned, we didn't see any spread of, you know, those things aren't present for intimate partner homicide. Sure, you have a susceptible population, and you even have, you know, a source of infection, but there's no real mode of transmission. There's no reason to believe that learning of intimate partner homicide in your community will make more intimate partner homicides occur.
We're talking with April Zioli, associate professor in the School of Criminal Justice at MSU. She's the lead author of a study that looked at patterns of gang violence in cities. So, I mean, this is pretty groundbreaking stuff, the idea that you could you could predict where it would spread potentially. Now that you know that it spreads in predictable ways, how does that translate into keeping it from spreading?
So by knowing that gang homicide moves and spreads, we can further study the conditions under which it moves into an area and the conditions under which it stays out of or leaves an area. So we can look for conditions that make a community more susceptible and conditions that protect a community. And as we see what factors contribute to this gang homicide problem moving into or staying out of an area, we can use that to predict homicide in Newark and other cities with similar conditions. And we can also potentially work to prevent homicide from moving into certain, you know, from moving into communities by increasing their level of protective factors. We're not there yet with the research, but that is where we hope to go.
Well, April Zioli, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.